distance and time. But one fact always remained constant. The chase must be approached from a position of strength and respect. One must have strength, for the chase will deal only with those capable of keeping their promises. One must have respect, for the chase must believe that those promises will be kept. There will be many cultural differences, and a warrior dealing with a chase must be wary of them. But never make the mistake of believing forbearance equates to acceptance, or that all positions are equally valid. There are things in the universe that are simply and purely evil. A warrior does not seek to understand them or to compromise with them. He seeks only to obliterate them.
There were 3 open-topped landspeeders worth, 9 men and 3 women in all. Eli and Thrawn watched through the meeting house doorway as the intruders drove carefully into the lane of damaged plants, forcing their way over through the damaged stalks. One at a time, the vehicles stopped, spacing themselves along the corridor at 20-meter intervals. The raiders climbed out, scattered along the lane, and got to work. Eli had hoped that all 3 of the conspirators Thrawn had identified earlier at the meeting would be present. It would certainly make it easier to file charges if they were caught in the act. But only the nervous one, Tanu, was present. Still, the fact that the landspeeders had driven straight into the field, apparently not caring that they were leaving visible damage on the remaining stalks, indicated that Thrawn had been correct in his conclusion that this would be the last raid for a while. The further implication was that everyone who wasn't working the diversionary raids was probably here. And with Thrawn's stormtroopers backing up the apes, the raiders weren't going to have the quick and easy smash and run they were expecting. In fact, there was a good chance the whole bunch of them would end up captured. If Eli and Thrawn could take this group as well, the Imperials might indeed roll up the whole conspiracy tonight. There would certainly be no lack of evidence. Each of the raiders had 2 long cylindrical bags attached to his or her waist, about 15 centimeters in diameter, trailing on the ground. They walked steadily along their assigned sections of the ore vein, digging into the soil with small trowels and shoveling their prizes into the bags.
"Interesting," Thrawn murmured. "Tanu isn't digging."
Eli focused his electrobinoculars. Thrawn was right. Tanu was going back and forth among the diggers, testing the material they were digging up with a handheld sensor.
"Checking the quality of ore?" he suggested.
"Perhaps," Thrawn said, his voice thoughtful. "Locate his full record. I want a list of his areas of knowledge and expertise."
"Yes, sir."
Eli lowered his electrobinoculars and pulled out his data pad. They'd already looked at the summary profiles of the 3 known conspirators, which had listed Tanu as a crop geneticist. The record came up, and Eli skimmed it. He frowned as something caught his eye.
His secondary schooling was in organic chemistry.
"Was he ever arrested or charged with a crime?"
"Nothing about that here," Eli said.
A thought struck him, and he keyed a new search. No arrests for Tanu himself, but his older brother was arrested for... He trailed off, his throat tightening as he read the rest of the entry.
"His older brother was arrested for possession of spice," he said. "Specifically a rare variety called Skarn that forms under grain fields."
Thrawn turned his glowing red eyes toward him.
"Grain fields such as this one?"
"Yes," Eli said,
a taste of bile in the back of his mouth. Spice, in any of its dozens of varieties, was a plague on the galaxy, a horribly addicting drug that its victims would lie, steal, assault, and murder for.
"This stuff is more a pre-spice compound, actually. It looks like you have to do some refining and chemical manipulation to make it full-fledged Skarn."
"Show me the method,"
Eli pulled up the file and handed over his datapad.
For a few minutes, Thrawn read in silence.
Then he handed back the datapad and pulled out his comlink.
"This is Commander Thrawn," he said softly. "Are the shuttles and stormtroopers I ordered ready to fly?" "Good. Send them to this location for prisoner retrieval. Also add Lieutenant Gim to the TIE escort. Launch when ready."
He got an acknowledgement and returned the comlink to his belt.
Eli did a quick run through the numbers.
Normally, prep and travel time would mean the shuttles would show up in 40 minutes. Thrawn's foresight in having them ready to go should cut that in half. "How many stormtroopers are coming?"
20, Thrawn said. "I didn't know how large the conspiracy was when I gave the orders."
"Better to err on the side of caution,"
Eli agreed. And 20 stormtroopers was erring well on the side of caution.
"Is Lieutenant Gim one of the new TIE pilots?"
"Yes," Thrawn said. "He's also the best we currently have."
Eli frowned.
Here on Sifar's open areas, it didn't exactly take an ace to handle a high-cover mission. Was Thrawn expecting resistance in the form of enemy airspeeders? He considered asking, decided it would be just as easy to wait and see, and turned his electrobinoculars back on the diggers.
They were making good progress.
Already the long bags they were dragging behind them were starting to fill up. By the time the stormtroopers arrived, they might well be ready to scurry back across the border.
"What's that?"
A distant voice whipped faintly across the empty field.
Eli winced. Unless, of course, they spooked and took off sooner. He focused on Tanu. The man was staring up into the night sky, fumbling a civilian set of electrobinoculars from a pouch at his waist. He lifted them up to his eyes.
"Set on stun," Thrawn said quietly as he drew his blaster. "I will move 100 meters to the right and take up position beside that border mark stone."
"Understood," Eli said. Peering across the ground, he located the rough obelisk at the edge of the field.
"You'll stay here," Thrawn continued. "I'll deal with the land speeders while you target the raiders. Make certain none of them gets past us."
"Understood," Eli said again. 12 against 2, and all 12 of the raiders had holstered blasters. Briefly, he hoped Thrawn had taken those odds into account.
"Do we attack together, or does one of us start?"
"I'll start," Thrawn said. "You'll know when to open fire."
Eli frowned.
"Oh no. How will I..."
But Thrawn had already slipped out into the darkness.
Eli mouthed a silent curse. "Great." He braced the side of his blaster against the edge of the meeting house doorway, hoping those long-ago Academy weapons classes would come back to him.
"It's the Lambda shuttles,"
Tanu said anxiously, his voice rising almost to a squeak.
"2 of them! Everyone back in the speeders! Come on, come on, come on!"
"I'll bark it down," someone growled contemptuously. "It's probably just that idiot imp bringing in a late buffet dinner or something."
The words were barely out of his mouth when Thrawn opened fire. His first shot burned through the rusty plating of the rearmost of the 3 land speeders, blasting the starboard aft repulsor lift. With a metallic screech, the front of the vehicle pitched up as that corner slammed onto the ground. The nearest raiders jerked as if they'd stepped on a static plate.
Eli clenched his teeth, wondering if this was when he was supposed to make his appearance.
Before he could decide, Thrawn fired again, taking out the same repulsor lift on the vehicle in front of it. That was enough for Tanu. Shrieking something incomprehensible, he dived into the 3rd land speeder, the one closest to him, and tried to spin it around back toward the border. But with the disabled vehicles blocking the path behind him, and with the taller and stiffer stalks on either side resisting his attempts to get through them, he was having trouble breaking free. He kept trying anyway, battering at the stalks over and over, gaining a few centimeters with each lunge. The rest of the raiders weren't so easily rattled. They sprinted instead toward the disabled vehicles, their long bags dragging and bouncing behind them, yanking out their blasters and firing in the general vicinity of Thrawn's concealment as they ran. Eli tensed, but they were in motion, and none of them seemed to be particularly good with their weapons, and all the bolts went wild. The raiders tumbled into cover behind the landspeeders and dropped to their knees, ducking lower as Thrawn shifted to a standard rapid-fire pattern designed to keep an enemy pinned down. The raiders responded by popping their heads up at random and squeezing off return fire. And as both sides settled down for battle, Eli realized that the raiders were now lined up neatly within his field of fire. Even better, pressed against the landspeeders and on their knees. They were not only stationary, but also had limited capacity to move or dodge. Eli smiled tightly. Thrawn had been right. He did know when to fire. Lining up his blaster on the first pair, he squeezed the trigger. The stun setting had a wider effective range than standard blaster fire, permitting each shot to take down two of the raiders. With their attention on Thrawn and his louder, more dangerous fire, the conspirators lost six of their number to Eli's attack before the rest suddenly woke up to the new threat. Instantly, they shifted their fire toward the meeting house, forcing Eli to throw himself sideways to avoid getting hit. He slammed onto the ground on his left shoulder, jarring his whole body and momentarily throwing off his aim. It was, in retrospect, the wrong move. Up to that point, his position had been somewhat obscure. Now he was out in the open. Shots hammered the meeting house and the ground around him as he scuttled as quickly as he could on elbows and knees toward another border stone to the meeting house's left. 5 meters into his mad scramble, he belatedly realized he probably should have gone the other way, past the raiders' defense line, and tried instead to reach Thrawn. There, the two of them could have worked in unison to hold off their opponents until the reinforcements arrived from the Thunder Wasp. Too late for that now. Swearing under his breath, Eli kept going, wincing with each shot that burned through the air or sizzled into the ground nearby. And then suddenly, all was silence. Cautiously, Eli wobbled to a halt. Still silence. Even more cautiously, he lifted his head. The men and women who had been shooting at him were sprawled on the ground beside the landspeeders. Standing over them, his blaster trained on the still-trapped Tanu, was Thrawn. Feeling like a fool, Eli stood up, brushed himself off as best he could, and walked over to his commander.
"Well done, Ensign," Thrawn said, his eyes and blaster still pointed at Tanu.
Tanu, for his part, had abandoned his attempts to escape and was leaning resignedly over his landspeeder's steering wheel.
"Are you injured?"
"No, sir," Eli said, feeling his face warming. "Well done?" "Not even close."
"Sorry, sir."
Thrawn spared him a quick look.
"Why are you sorry?" "You executed your part perfectly."
"But I didn't get them all," Eli pointed out. "And when they fired at me, I went the wrong direction."
"I did not expect you to defeat them all," Thrawn assured him. "And your decision to draw their fire away from me was what enabled me to move unnoticed to a position where I could bring a final end to their resistance."
"Oh,"
Eli said lamely, torn between the reflexive desire to tell Thrawn that it hadn't been a decision at all, and the equally reflexive reluctance not to argue with his commanding officer when he was being complimented. Thrawn didn't give him time to resolve either part of the quandary.
"Come," he said. "I expect Mr. Tanu is ready to talk."
Mr. Tanu was.
"It wasn't my idea,"
he groaned, still draped across the steering wheel.
"It was Pulsary. She's the one who came up with it."
"Yet you were the one who refined the pre-spice for smuggling," Thrawn said. "Having learned the technique from your brother."
"They forced me,"
he moaned.
"I didn't want to, but they forced me."
"The technique is quite interesting,"
Thrawn went on, as if Tanu hadn't spoken.
A small change in the formulation results in a product that appears to be Skarn, but with the effects drastically diminished. A man who is being forced to work against his will could easily sabotage their efforts and desires. Yet you did not.
Tanu raised himself from the steering wheel, and even in the darkness, Eli could see the disgust in his face. He didn't like being caught, and he especially didn't like being caught by an alien.
You're a clever little imp, aren't you? Fine. He caught us. Now what?
He will be turned over to a court for trial.
And what are you going to charge us all with?
Possession of an illegal substance, Thrawn said. Assault on Aith villages and their inhabitants.
I don't think so,
Tanu said.
See, there aren't any raids going tonight. Pulsary didn't trust you not to put some stormtroopers on guard. So that's off the list, and possession of pre-spice isn't illegal.
Really? Thrawn said. Engine? Eli already had his data pad out. A quick search. Damn it.
He's right, sir, he said. Pre-spice isn't an illegal substance. There are too many other products it can be turned into that are perfectly safe and legal.
But the product you have created is illegal, Thrawn pointed out.
Maybe,
Tanu said.
But you'll never prove it. See, that's what the others are doing tonight instead of poking at the safari. They're hiding all our product where no one will ever find it.
Perhaps.
Thrawn reached into the landspeeder and plucked the sensor from Tanu's belt.
Perhaps not.
Tanu barked a laugh.
If you think you're going to search the Enclave looking for our supply, you can forget it. That thing's range is only 20 meters, and it only registers pre-spice anyway. Face it, you've got nothing.
On the contrary, I have all I need, Thrawn said calmly. 20 meters would be quite sufficient. One final question. Which of your group brought in Night Swan to advise you?
Tanu's eyes narrowed.
How did you know about him?
Answer my question.
Tanu pursed his lips.
It was Scath, he said. She knew someone who knew him and thought he could help.
And so he did, Thrawn said. But not enough. His end will come. Yours has now arrived.
And with perfect timing, the two shuttles and their three accompanying TIEs swooped past overhead. The shuttles curved around and angled toward the ground near Thrawn. The starfighters rising again into low-cover and high-cover formations. 10 minutes later, the unconscious conspirators were aboard the first shuttle, binders firmly locked around their wrists and ankles. Eli used that time to check the landspeeders, hoping for contraband or something else that could be used against them in court. But aside from the material in the collection bags, there was nothing. Unless there was some tweak in local law that made possession of pre-spice illegal, and if the others really had stayed home instead of raiding across the border, then Thrawn might very well have nothing.
All secured, sir, the stormtrooper commander reported as Tanu trudged up the shuttle ramp under the blasters of a pair of watchful guards and disappeared inside. Orders?
Take the prisoners back to the Enclave by way of the Aith villages I've marked, Thrawn said, handing him a data card. If you see any fighting there, you are to intervene on the side of the Aiths. Do your best to take the human attackers alive, but you are free to use deadly force if you deem it necessary.
Yes, sir, the commander said. Do you want the other shuttle left here?
It will accompany you, Thrawn said. There will be more prisoners before the night is over, either in the villages or in the Enclave. I will keep Lieutenant Gim. You will take the other two TIEs as escort.
Yes, sir.
Stiffening briefly to attention, he strode toward the shuttles, giving orders as he went. A few minutes later, the shuttles were back in the sky, the TIEs flying in flanking formation.
And now we end this, Thrawn said, fingering the sensor he'd taken from Tanu. Come.
Lieutenant Gim was waiting by his TIE, coming to attention as Thrawn and Eli neared him.
I'm told you need some fancy flying, Commander, he said.
Indeed, Thrawn confirmed. Running through the ground below our feet is a vein of material that is a precursor to a spice variety called Skarn.
The pilot stiffened a little further.
Yes, sir, he said, his voice darkening. I've heard of it.
This sensor will show its presence, Thrawn continued. It does, however, have only a minimal range, 20 meters or less, which will require ground-level flight. The vein itself almost certainly does not run straight, but twists and turns along its length. Do you think you can follow it?
May I see the sensor?
Thrawn handed it over. The pilot peered at it, waved it back and forth around him, then nodded.
Yes, sir, I can, he said. May I suggest I also take a little gunnery practice as I fly over it?
Your enthusiasm is noted and appreciated, Lieutenant, Thrawn said. But I am told that pre-spice runs deep in places, and I understand that a certain degree of heat is part of the refining process. We do not wish to accidentally turn it into the final deadly product.
No, sir, the pilot said. If you just want it mapped, I can do that.
We will hardly be simply mapping, Lieutenant,
Thrawn assured him, pulling out his comlink.
As you said, gunnery practice. Lieutenant Commander Osgood, this is Commander Thrawn. I have an interesting challenge for you.
It was, Eli would afterward decide, the most insane military operation he'd ever seen or even heard of. But it worked. It was spectacular enough from the ground. It was probably even more so from low orbit. Gim flew his TIE fighter low over the cropland, nearly brushing the tops of the stalks at times, then continued on over grazing lands, marshes, and more cropland. He flew in gentle curves or dizzying zigzags, wherever the trail led him, always following the line of pre-spice lurking beneath the soil. And following along 50 meters behind him was a blazing wave of ground-shattering flame as the cleansing fire from the Thunder Wasp's turbo lasers carved out the same path, their focal point precisely matching the TIE's maneuvers and burning the pre-spice into oblivion. By morning, as Thrawn had predicted, it was over.
What do you do?
Joko demanded.
His voice shakes.
Do you attack our sovereign land at will?
I have destroyed the source of the conspirators' profits, Thrawn said.
Did the chief truly not see the pattern nor understand the result?
With the pre-spice gone, they have no further incentive to seek control over Aif land.
You attacked us!
Joko repeated.
You destroyed farmland and damaged homes and water springs.
If I had not destroyed all the pre-spice, the attacks would have continued.
The Empire would have given us justice without destruction.
Without the destruction, the justice would have been temporary, Thrawn said. The value was too great to be ignored. The thieves would have come back. When they did, you would have lost more than just farmland.
What more? Orchards? Bridges?
Lives.
For a few seconds, Joko gazed at him in silence. But the silence was stiff, and there was bitterness beneath it.
I see your concern for my people,
he said at last.
But their lives and lands could have been protected in a different way. A better way.
You may appeal my actions to Coruscant, Thrawn said. They may repudiate them.
If the damage will remain, I will appeal your actions, and I will pray we never meet again.
Vanto was waiting when Thrawn emerged from the shuttle.
Ensign Vanto, Thrawn said. Has Coruscant responded to my report?
Yes, sir,
Vanto said, his voice dark with contempt.
I'm afraid they're not happy with you. No doubt their unhappiness will expand when Chief Joko delivers his own reaction.
Fine,
Vanto said with a resigned sigh.
They're not just not happy, they're furious.
As expected.
Which is insane,
Vanto said, his anger appearing through his decorum.
You ended the conflict. You exposed a criminal conspiracy, and you kept a deep vein's worth of spice off the market. What more do they want?
They want a commander who follows procedures, Thrawn said. They want a commander who will ask their advice.
And their permission?
Perhaps, Thrawn said. I have found that many admirals aspire to that rank because of a wish to exercise control and authority. Such leaders are threatened if officers of lower rank solve difficult problems without them.
And of course, there's always politics lurking around the corner.
Vanto eyed him thoughtfully.
What about you, Commander? Why do you seek high rank?
It was a question many had asked over the years. Thrawn had asked it of himself. The answer never seemed to satisfy the questioner.
Because there are problems that must be solved. Some cannot be solved by anyone except me.
I see.
Vanto was silent a moment.
Senior Lieutenant Hammerly was able to stall them for a bit by telling them you were consulting with the local chief, but they expect you to call back.
Of course, Thrawn said. I will do so immediately.
What will you tell them?
The truth.
Vanto had now asked the question. He was no more satisfied than anyone who had come before him. Thrawn wondered if anyone would ever be satisfied, or would ever truly understand.
The truth. Eli scowled the words to himself as he strode down the Thunder Wasp's central corridor toward his quarters. The truth. When did that ever gain anyone anything?
Thrawn had been telling the truth pretty much since he'd arrived in Imperial space. Yet he was continually getting hauled back to Coruscant to explain himself before increasingly hostile officers' boards. It was only through the intervention and good graces of people like Colonel Ularin that he was still even in the Navy, let alone commanding his own ship. The truth. No. Truth never gained anyone anything. All it did was anger those who preferred lies and confusion and backspinning in the hope of making themselves look better. As far as Eli had been able to tell, that was pretty much everyone. Ahead, the door to the starfighter hangar slid open, and Lieutenant Gim stepped out.
Lieutenant,
Eli greeted him.
Excellent flying down there.
Thank you,
Gim said, an odd expression on his face.
I'm glad I ran into you.
You have a question, sir?
Gim's lip twisted in an ironic smile.
You don't remember me, do you?
Eli frowned, studying his face. He couldn't place it.
No, sir,
he admitted.
Should I?
I would have thought so,
Gim said with a casual shrug.
Of course, it was pretty dark at the time, and you probably had other things on your mind.
Eli caught his breath, as it suddenly clicked.
You were one of the cadets who attacked Commander Thrawn.
I categorically deny that, of course.
Gim lowered his eyes pointedly to Eli's insignia plaque.
And you're still an ensign.
An ensign in service to the best commander in the Navy,
Eli countered stiffly.
Maybe,
Gim said.
Though from what I hear, Whether he stays a commander is somewhat up in the air.
We'll see,
Eli said.
What do you want?
Nothing, really, Kim said. I just wanted you to know that despite what I'm sure were Commander Thrawn's best efforts, I wasn't tossed out of the academy. In fact, things worked out very well for me. Commandant Deanlark was able to pull enough strings to get the three of us transferred to starfighter training at Skystrike Academy.
Really?
Eli said.
Commandant Deanlark did that, did he?
Kim's forehead wrinkled just for a moment, but then it cleared.
Oh, I see. You think my family were the ones who pulled the strings?
He shrugged.
Doesn't matter, really, as long as strings were pulled by someone. But don't take it too hard, Ensign. Getting to be a commander even this long is pretty impressive for an unknown region's alien. If he ends up back as a lieutenant in charge of droid repair, well, he'll still have his memories.
I'm sure he'll have more than that,
Eli said. Kim raised his eyebrows.
I'm sure he'll have more than that, sir, he corrected.
With a supreme effort, Eli stifled the sudden urge to punch Kim across the corridor.
I'm sure he'll have more than that, sir.
Better,
Kim said.
I think I'll go have a drink with the real officers now. Good night, Ensign.
He turned and strode off down the passageway. Eli watched him, an unpleasant mix of emotions swirling inside him. Thrawn had been right. The man had become an outstanding starfighter pilot. Only he would probably never know who he had to thank for that. In fact, he'd likely go to his grave thinking that he'd put one over on the poor, dumb alien. With a sigh, Eli continued on toward his quarters, wondering if anyone, anywhere, really cared about truth.
Chapter 19.
Alliances are useful in some situations. In others, they are absolutely vital. But they must always be approached with caution. Unity of that sort is based on mutual advantage. While that advantage exists, the alliance may stand firm. But needs change, and advantages fade. And a day may come when one ally sees new benefits to be gained in betraying another. The warrior must be alert to such changes if he is to anticipate and survive an unannounced blow. Fortunately, the signs are usually evident in time for defense to be planned and executed. There is also always the possibility that changes will serve to meld the allies even more closely together. It is rare, but it can happen.
The full blend is really the best,
Lady Tyr Hem said, her long, thin Findian fingers caressing the bottle Orinda had brought her.
I stand deeply in your debt.
I'm pleased you're happy, Orinda said. I, in turn, am in your debt for your sympathy to the goals of higher skies.
Your goals are much like mine and my husband's,
Lady Hem said, still gently stroking the bottle's neck.
You must have gone long and far to find this particular wine.
It was my pleasure,
Orinda assured her. It had, in fact, been something of a challenge, entailing trips to nearly 30 of the Federal District's finest wine shops and several hours of studying labels until she'd found the exact vintage, blend, and texture she knew Lady Hem wanted. But it was worth it. The look on the Findian's face was priceless.
At any rate, I must leave now,
Orinda added, standing up.
I just wanted to drop off this small token of my appreciation, and to ask if Senator Hem had found time to read the document I sent him.
He has,
Lady Hem said, her fingers now moving to the bottle's textured label.
I believe he agrees with your agenda and your plans. But I will speak to him about that this night.
She blinked rapidly, her species version of a wide smile.
Over a glass of wine, perhaps.
I look forward to hearing from him,
Arinda said, smiling back.
Until we speak again, Lady Hem, farewell.
Farewell, my good friend, Arinda Price.
Driller, not surprisingly, was aghast.
2,000 credits for a bottle of wine? He gasped as he stared at Arinda's receipt. Are you out of your mind?
The Findians are a highly technological species, and are very devoted to family,
Arinda reminded him.
Both of those go double for Senator Hem. A simple bottle of his wife's favorite wine, and he's as good as in our pocket.
Not exactly a simple bottle,
Driller growled.
Will this at least buy you access to his office?
I'm expecting an invitation by the end of the week,
Arinda assured him.
And yes, I'm sure I'll be able to get some numbers from him about the Navy's military budget and the level of Senate support. The secret numbers, not the ones the public gets to see.
Great, Driller said. It's important to know where the money is going so we can see what's left for schools and hospitals.
Absolutely,
Arinda said, smiling to cover her sudden surge of contempt. Did he really think she was this naive and stupid? Apparently he did.
So is there anyone else you want me to pitch higher skies to?
Let's see, he said, studying his data pad. A couple of governors are in for a visit. Midrim, not too difficult. Or, ooh, how big a fish are you willing to go after?
How big a fish have you got?
The biggest, he said, eyeing her closely. The fish you were once going to leave me for until the job offer fell through. Grand Moff Tarkin.
Arinda felt her stomach tighten. Tarkin. And the timing was absolutely perfect.
Wow,
she said, trying for just the right mix of casualness and interest.
Sure, why not?
Why not is because he's got a reputation for chewing up advocates and small bureaucrats and spitting them out in neat linear meat strips,
Driller warned.
It won't be one of the milk runs you've been doing lately. This'll be more like a dogfight.
Milk runs are fun, Arinda said. But I like dogfights, too. Can you get me in to see him?
I think so, Driller said. You sure?
Arinda smiled.
Trust me, she said. Tarkin's someone I've always wanted to meet.
There were, Arinda had learned, many tricks politicians and military types used to intimidate, pressure, and otherwise put visitors at a disadvantage. Tarkin knew them all. It began with his office. The long walk from the door, the thick, textured carpet that dragged at a visitor's feet and threatened to trip her up with each step. The sunlight glinting off corners of shelves and display stands, and the desk itself. The spots shifting and flickering and distracting. The objects on the shelves and stands were the next layer. Mementos of Tarkin's past triumphs. A procession of reminders of his power. Here and there, she spotted some ancient and valuable artifact that he had either bought, stolen, or despoiled. Yet another object lesson. The man got whatever he wanted. It was an impressive display, especially considering that the Grand Moff probably only used his office a few weeks each year. His main office, the one from which he controlled a large swath of the Outer Rim, was probably even more intimidating. At the end of the gauntlet, seated in a tall backed chair as he watched her approach, was Tarkin. If the office itself wasn't enough to put guests into defensive mode, Arinda mused, their first look at the man himself probably did the trick. The gaunt face, gray-white hair, thin lips, and steely eyes
were like an image of waiting death.
The 12 tiles of his insignia plaque were in deceptively colorful contrast with the dark olive green of his uniform. The stillness of his expression and body as he watched her approach was like that of a jungle predator preparing to strike. It was an impressive display of power and intimidation, one that no doubt worked well against nearly everyone who dared enter his sanctum. Orinda intended to be the exception.
"Governor Tarkin,"
she greeted him as she reached the desk.
"I appreciate you taking the time to see me."
"Miss Orinda Price,"
he greeted her in return. His voice was a match for the coolness of his face.
"I understand you represent an advocacy group called Higher Skies."
"That's certainly what they think,"
Orinda agreed.
"Actually, I'm here to represent myself, and to make you the best offer you get today."
His expression didn't change, but his eyes seemed to grow colder.
"Really?" he said. "I think perhaps you overestimate your charm."
"Oh, I don't run on charm, Governor,"
Orinda assured him.
"I run on information."
She slipped a data card out of her pouch and set it on the desk.
"Here's a sample. I'll be happy to wait while you look it over."
For a moment he was silent, his eyes locked on hers. Then a small smile creased his lips.
"Full credit for ingenuity,"
he said, picking up the data card.
"Sit down."
Orinda stepped to the chair at the corner of his desk and lowered herself into it, trying not to let any of her submerged apprehension make it to the surface. She was 90% certain she'd read this man correctly, but that remaining 10% could make or break her. Tarkin watched her another moment, then slipped the data card into his computer.
"At least you aren't so obvious as to try a data thief program,"
he commented.
"Not at all."
Orinda pulled out another data card and set it on the desk.
"This is the one with the thief program. It's the Higher Skies brochure and agenda I was supposed to give you."
Tarkin's forehead furrowed briefly.
"Really?"
he said, his tone intrigued.
"Who exactly are you, Ms. Price?"
"Someone who wants to make a deal that will benefit us both,"
Orinda said.
"But please, look at the information on that card. It'll give you a taste of what I have to offer."
Again, Tarkin gazed at her a moment before returning his attention to his computer. Orinda sat silently, watching his eyes track back and forth across the display as he skimmed the file. She'd gotten good at reading faces, human and non-human alike, during her time with Higher Skies. But Tarkin's might as well have been a theatrical mask. He reached the end and turned back to Orinda.
"Interesting," he said.
"You found it informative?"
Orinda asked.
"Hardly," he said. "Most of this I already knew."
Orinda felt her stomach tighten.
"I see."
"Don't look so concerned," Tarkin said with another thin smile. "That's a good thing. It proves you successfully tapped into Governor Nasling's records, and also lends credence to one or two items I was unaware of. No, my comment was directed at the skill of your employers. How did they come to create such a clever thief program?"
"I imagine they brought in someone to help,"
Orinda said.
"You see, I think they're rebels."
For the briefest of moments, a flicker of emotion crossed Tarkin's face. Then the mask fell back into place.
"Rebels?" he repeated.
"Yes, Your Excellency,"
Orinda said.
"But don't worry. All they have is the merest skeleton of that data file. Just enough to keep them happy with my work, so that they'll keep sending me to other officials."
She dared a smile.
"And keep funding me, of course. Bribery can be expensive."
"Especially on Coruscant,"
he agreed.
"So this is a double-layer thief program?"
"Exactly,"
Orinda said.
It was layered on top of the Higher Skies version by an associate. The idea of bringing it to you was inspired by another associate, both of whom would prefer to remain anonymous.
She added, as if it were an afterthought. The tease worked exactly as she had hoped. Tarkin leaned back in his chair, his eyes boring into hers.
"We are far past the point of coyness," he said coldly. "Their names."
"The program was crafted on the orders of ISB Colonel Wolf Ularin,"
Arenda said.
"The one who advised me to bring the results to you was Commander Thrawn."
"Ah," Tarkin said, his voice dropping a few more degrees.
"So you dropped the names of two highly respected individuals in the hope that I'll think you have powerful friends and benefactors. Which one of them suggested that?"
"Neither,"
Arenda said, starting to sweat a little.
"I've always considered that you were the only benefactor I needed."
To her relief, he gave her another thin smile.
"Thank you for not presuming we would ever be friends."
His smile faded, a small frown creasing his forehead.
"Interesting about Commander Thrawn. He was on Coruscant just a few weeks ago, explaining himself to yet another court-martial panel."
"What did he do?"
Arenda asked. She tried to keep track of Thrawn's activities, but she hadn't heard a whisper of this one.
"Burned off a vein of Skarn spice on some alien's territory," Tarkin said. "Direct and efficient. Not as politically astute as some would have liked."
"What was the outcome?"
"He was cleared, of course," Tarkin said. "The High Command doesn't especially like him, but they find it difficult to argue with his results. The Emperor seems to have taken a fancy to him as well. What exactly did he and our good Colonel Ularin expect from you in return for their help?"
"Colonel Ularin wanted the data, of course,"
Arenda said.
"He was highly interested in my, shall we say, unofficial survey of the Empire's top politicians." "I assume you haven't turned it over to him?"
"Not yet,"
Arenda said.
"I thought you might like a preview, and perhaps to extract a few tidbits you could use for..."
She shrugged.
"Let's just say, for the good of the Empire."
"Very noble of you," Tarkin said. "And Commander Thrawn?"
"Amazingly easy to please,"
Arenda said.
"All he asked for were expedited repairs on his ship and a long overdue promotion for his aide.
The first I've already managed through some of my other contacts, but there's still some political resistance to the second."
"Resistance to a military promotion?" Tarkin asked disbelievingly. "Which of our esteemed politicians has that much time and energy to spare?"
"Moff Gotti,"
Arenda said, watching Tarkin closely. It was all she had hoped for. More, even. Tarkin's face stiffened, his eyes going bright and narrow. She'd already known there was a rivalry between the two men. She hadn't realized how deep and bitter that rivalry truly was.
"Moff Gotti," Tarkin repeated. "I should have guessed."
"I have information on him, of course,"
Arenda said, keeping her voice casual.
"He was one of the first politicians I targeted."
"You have that information with you?"
"Right here,"
Arenda said, touching her hip pouch and then pulling out her data pad.
"But first, I thought you might be interested in hearing a recording I made a few months ago."
She keyed it on and turned up the volume.
"This had better be important,"
Gotti's voice came from the speaker.
"And I mean damn important. I'm this close to having Otlis whipped for waking me up, and you don't even want to know what I want to do to you."
"It's important,"
Arinda's voice came back.
"You were right. Higher Skies is keeping watch on many important people. I've found the files."
"Of course I was right. Any reason this revelation couldn't have waited until later?"
"It probably could have, but I thought you'd want to hear as soon as possible about the Tarkin file.
They have a file on Tarkin. What's in it?
I don't know. This one's under a different encryption than anything else I've found. But if it's like the ones I've been able to read, it probably has a lot of secrets in it. Things Tarkin wouldn't want anyone else knowing about.
Perfect. Yes, I absolutely want those files.
I thought you would. I can collate them with the other files I've been able to find, but I wanted to make sure you wanted this one.
Don't be stupid. You have the weapon I need to take down Tarkin, and you want to know if I want it? Get it on a data card and bring it to my office. Now!
Yes, Your Excellency. As I said, though, at the moment it's unreadable. If you give me time, I may be able to decrypt it.
Just bring it to me. I'll decrypt it. Let's see how high and mighty Grand Moff Tarkin is when I'm shoving his dirty little secrets down his throat.
Very well, Your Excellency.
That's enough, Tarkin said quietly.
Arinda shut down the recording.
Imagine that,
she said mock seriously.
A high official conspiring to use illegally obtained material to topple another high official.
And being foolish enough to allow that conspiracy to be recorded.
Tarkin eyed her.
I noticed your own voice wasn't nearly as identifiable as his.
A malfunction in the recorder.
Of course, Tarkin said. Tell me, what exactly did you give him?
Absolutely nothing,
Arinda assured him.
It was complete gibberish wrapped in what appeared to be an advanced encryption layer. He's probably still trying to find a coherent sentence in it.
I see, Tarkin murmured.
So Colonel Yularen will get data on the Empire's politicians. Commander Thrawn will get his aide promoted. I'll have Yularen's data before Yularen gets it, plus the satisfaction of removing Moff Gotti from the face of the galaxy.
He raised his eyebrows.
We haven't yet talked about you. What do you get out of this?
Your patronage and support,
Arinda said.
The satisfaction of knowing I've helped the true powers that keep the Empire running.
She paused.
And, if you should find it useful and expedient, I'd like the governorship of Lothal.
Lothal? Tarkin echoed, leaning forward again and keying his computer.
Not exactly the ground-shaking demand I expected.
Why there?
The rivalry between Governor Azadi and Senator Rankin cost my parents their mining company and forced them out of their home,
Arinda said, an unexpected surge of anger rising inside her. She thought she'd put the emotion of that betrayal behind her. Apparently not.
Being made Governor of Lothal will humiliate the First and make it easier for me to take down the Second.
A clear vision of one's goals is important in a governor, Tarkin said dryly. But governorships are valuable commodities. I'm afraid this,
he tapped the data cards on his desk,
isn't quite enough.
I thought it might not be.
Taking a deep breath, Arinda pulled out another data card.
But this is.
And it is.
Everything about Lothal the Empire would ever want to know, Arinda said. Its mines and refineries, including the quiet and secret mines that no one talks about and no one pays taxes or tariffs on. Its infrastructure and factories, including output numbers and efficiency ratings. The banking structure and how assets are hidden or spirited away. Its people, including social frameworks and which species get along or don't get along together. Summaries of archaeological surveys in the northern areas that suggest the presence of untapped mineral resources on both protected and unprotected lands.
She straightened up in her chair and set the card on Tarkin's desk.
The Empire is gathering up the Outer Rim worlds. It might as well be as easy and painless as possible for everyone.
Interesting, Tarkin said, making no move to take the card. Some would consider that a betrayal of their homeworld.
I prefer to think of it as loyalty to my new homeworld,
Arinda said.
Well said,
Tarkin said approvingly.
And if I may say so, your timing is impeccable. As it happens, that particular governorship may soon be vacant.
Governor Azadi is retiring?
Arinda asked, frowning. She hadn't heard anything about that.
Yes, Tarkin said. Rather against his will, it would seem.
Interesting,
Arinda said. Not that Azadi didn't deserve it. Whether he'd been actively involved in her mother's arrest and the loss of their company, or whether he'd simply stood aside while others in his office did his dirty work, he still deserved it.
Ranking?
Perhaps, Tarkin said. Perhaps other reasons. Still, Senator Ranking is angling for the governorship.
He raised his eyebrows.
I wonder which of you wants it more.
I've given you the means to take down Moff Gotti,
Arinda said, forcing calmness through her sudden flash of anger and frustration. She would not lose now, especially not to Ranking.
I have inside information on other Moff's governors and senators. I've given you Lothal. I want that governorship, Your Excellency. What more do you need to make that happen?
Oh, much, much more, Ms. Price, Tarkin assured her. There are many people in power whom I would like to know better. Fortunately, I now have you.
Arinda clenched her teeth. She'd started as a senator's lackey, and now she was being offered the job of a Grand Moff's lackey?
Your Excellency?
Of course, as a governor, you will have much better access to those people than you will as an advocate, he continued. Yes, I can see this being advantageous to us both.
Arinda let out a silent sigh. So he'd just been playing with her. She should have known.
I'm glad you approve, Your Excellency.
Of course, going from a mere civilian to a planetary governor is quite a step, Tarkin continued. Still, you've had a great deal of experience and contact with the powerful of the Empire, as well as the advantage of being a local of the world in question. Perhaps we'll begin by designating you as acting governor, before granting you the full title.
For how long?
Arinda asked.
A few months, Tarkin said with a shrug. A year at the most. Technically, of course, these appointments are supposed to be run through the palace. But I see no reason we need to bother the bureaucrats. You'll need to spend a fair amount of your first year or two in office here on Coruscant, learning the details of your new position.
While also gathering the data you want?
But a short absence from Lothal shouldn't be a problem, Tarkin continued. There are several ministers in place there, any of whom can run things while you fulfill your side of our bargain. You'll simply need to pick one before you return to Coruscant.
Arinda smiled. The governorship of Lothal. A clear shot at taking down Ranking, and she'd get to live among the elite on Coruscant for a while longer. She couldn't have planned it better if she'd tried.
I think we have an agreement, Your Excellency.
We do. Tarkin held out a hand. The rest of your data, please.
Here's half of it,
Arinda said, pulling two more data cards from her pouch.
I'll give you the other half once I've been confirmed in the governorship.
Of course, Tarkin said. You'll fit in quite well here, Ms. Price. Or should I say, Governor Price?
Thank you, Your Excellency,
she said, standing up.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have one more errand to run. I'm sure you want to look over those data cards anyway.
She pointed at them.
Oh, and the recording of Moff Gotti is on the second card. You'll want to take special care with that one.
Juihir was walking across the Yin Chom Dojo's central mat, duffel bag in hand, when Arinda arrived.
Hey, Arinda,
Juahir greeted her.